Hi, my name's Matt Pollard.
This is Mark Goodman.
And you are listening to the pilot, the very first episode of Holding the High Line, a Colorado Rapids theme podcast with the Rabbi in Red. Mark, how did we get here?
How did we get here to the proverbial basement for two blogging, sports writing, side gigging fellows like ourselves? Wow, what a great question. Well, as you guys probably know, since you're all Rapids fanatics, Matt writes for Last Word on Sports, and he paints beautiful pictures in prose, and I more humbly write for the Burgundy Wave, the Rapids' own SB Nation blog, and I've been writing about the Rapids, and Matt's been writing about Rapids for years, and we just thought, you know, we write about this stuff a lot. Maybe we should talk about it sometime and save some of our listeners the eye strain that comes with staring into a blue screen for hours on end.
Absolutely. And we look forward to maybe filling in a gap, say, in your work commute as you're driving down I-25, or maybe some other time in which you're trying to fill some void of silence in your car or cooking dinner or what, so to speak.
We can also serve as punishment for your children. Listen, stop hitting your sister or daddy's going to put on that really boring soccer podcast again.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I think one thing that I think really hit me as far as doing this podcast, Mark, I feel like there's a void in Colorado Rapids audio coverage right now, and I feel like both of us kind of can fill that void, and we can fill it together pretty well, and I think there's a need and a hunger amongst the Rapids fan base, and then also just the MLS ether in general for, you know, a podcast that's speaking analytically, articulately, talking about stats, and really getting in-depth into the tactics of what Colorado Rapids Soccer Club are doing. I feel like there's a void for that, and hopefully Holding the High Line is able to do that. Mark, do you want to tell the listeners a little bit about how we came about the name and all of our double and triple entendres?
Sure. Before you say that, I just wanted to double down on what you said. I feel like the market for interviewing players is totally covered by the Rapids podcast with Richard Fleming, which is a great podcast, especially if he can get something really interesting from a player or from the coach. And the Voice of C38 is also a great podcast that covers its bases really well. They're super interested in the game day experience, in individual players' stories. They're really interested in post-game and looking forward to the next game. We're going to be a little bit nerdier. We're a little bit more interested in tactics. Matt and I, we both talk a lot about kind of the bigger picture of what's going on in MLS, coaching trends, incoming transfers, outgoing transfers. A lot of, you know, we're kind of into the nitty-gritty and the minutia, and we definitely are looking kind of beyond the Colorado area. So, Holding the High Lines, we had a long list of really bad suggestions of names that I think we kind of ran down and rejected really, really quickly. And Holding the High Line was the one that really obviously stuck for the longest period. I'm trying to find one of the really terrible names that I came up with.
First of all, in general, just, you know, changing the I in Rapids to pod to make it Rap Pod or anything like that. There are a bunch of really, really terrible dad jokes that I'm sure your kids, Mark, would have rolled their eyes on.
We also had Rapid Response, which is a pretty bad name. Rocky Mountain Soccer with Rabbi in Red, which is not a terrible name, but how generic and boring would that have been, right? You had the redhead and the rabbi, which that could have been about anything.
I mean,
that could have been a podcast about Irish Catholic and Jewish internecine religious conflict in 19th century Northern Europe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it was good that we went around that. I think Holding the High Line has, you know, it's a soccer term, obviously. It's about when the defense is pushing high, which exposes you to risk along the back line. One of my favorite side references that's there, I've watched a Real Madrid versus, I feel like it was Man City match, where Man City were holding what the commentators referred to as a suicidal high line, because Real, with its speed, could just get around the back and go in.
And I just, Suicidal Highline would have been cool if we were a punk band, but
yes.
we're very much not. I mean, I scream well, but I play guitar lousy. So I think, Holding the Highline had the soccer thing, it had the tactics thing, right? It was clearly a tactical move, and then that led to me and Matt arguing for hours about whether, we should be, in the logo, putting four little icons for players or five, because the Rapids are going with five at the back this year. And then we also, you know, the high line was clearly a double riff on our altitude thing, which is always a great joke, but I think altitude puns are pretty well trod here in Colorado. And then lastly, obviously...
reference to the hash.
Colorado smokes a lot of pot, man. I mean, they're high a lot of the time, he said, while drinking a Johnny Walker Black. So... you know, it was, if you can get four things in once, tactics, soccer, esoteric terms, marijuana, and high altitude, what the hell, man?
Absolutely. So, Mark, let's get into it. Listeners, we are recording this on Monday, January 29th, 2018. Earlier today, not Tommy Smith, Danny Wilson, formerly of Glasgow Rangers FC, was officially announced as another center back signing. He'll take up an international roster spot. So with that, Mark, the Colorado Rapids and Anthony Hudson are filling out their roster. They're currently in preseason training right now, and of course now there's the big debate with all the new players coming in, all the changes that happened during the 2017 to 2018 winter off season of, you know, who's starting, who's not starting, so to speak. You know, what are they doing as far as the DPs, what's tactically happening? You know, I think maybe the worst kept secret right now for the Rapids is the fact that they're playing a 5-3-2 or a 3-5-2, you know, a formation that Anthony Hudson obviously was very familiar with in his time with the New Zealand national team. So let's talk about sort of how the different aspects of the field are going to play and where we see certain players fitting in. I'm going to go first since I was the one talking and I have the metaphorical talking stick.
Why don't you start with the strikers and then you'll pitch to me and say, and I'll tell you whether I think that, whether you're an idiot or not.
Okay. And based on the two sheets that we have right now, because we're very organized and nerdy here and we have all of this stuff written down here, folks, I know immediately we're going to get into a little bit of an impasse, Mark. Obviously, Dombo is my number nine right now. I think depending on how preseason goes, either Jack McBean, previously acquired from the LA Galaxy, or Caleb Calvert will back him up at the number nine position. And I have Gashi starting up top underneath him, you know, an underneath striker. You know, he won the Golden Boot in that position as the secondary striker in the Swiss League a couple of years ago before coming to Colorado. So those are my strike partners. I guess to that point, I have Stefan Aigner playing the pseudo number 10 role in central midfield.
Yeah, I mean, the fundamental question that you ask here is what ought your strikers to do and how are you going to line them up? So last year with the kind of shift to the hope of a shift to a more offensive looking Rapids, the team seemed to want to move away from a one striker to a two striker kind of system, although one was kind of recessed and dropped a little bit. I always liked last year, one of the things I saw the team do alternately was push Doyle high on the line and have Baji drop into the space behind, which is counterintuitive because Baji's the big, tall, strong, physical hold-up guy. Doyle's a little bit more slight. I kind of see something like that happening, that we're going to be in what's more of like a 5-3-1-1. And that, you know, when you say Baji paired maybe with McBean, McBean to me does a lot of the same hold-up play that Baji does. He's biggish, he's physical, he's not going to get around you or run at you. You know, I think I think you're more likely to see Stefan Aigner underneath Baji or Gashi underneath Baji. Now, taking one step back off of this, and then I'll shut up and kind of move along, so we want to keep this. One of the other things Matt and I talked about is the goal here is to keep this pod tight, very tight, tighter than an Arsenal kit, right? As the boys on Men.
We don't want our proverbial nipples being exposed here, but I definitely think
nobody wants to see my dad bod.
Being succinct is something that we both care about in our writing, and is something that we're going to carry on to our audio aspects of things. But Mark,
yeah,
continue.
Says the guy who literally professionally gets paid to bore audiences from a pulpit. Come hear my high holiday sermons. They're only 35 minutes long. So
So I think but the $64,000 question that a lot of Rapids fans had in the off season was, all right, are we going to get a number 10 or a number 9? And the answer was, why not do neither, right? The team was very much expected to go and spend big on a striker, and there were a lot of really interesting rumors. Kalulu and Keseru, I think, was the Romanian guy. And
they were in the hunt for Ola Kamara before the LA Galaxy pulled
right,
the trigger on that.
You know, of course, everybody thinks we should be getting Zlatan. No, I mean, there was talk also about us getting Jossy Zardes. You know, like, their hope sprang eternal that the Rapids would go out and get a really top-flight striker to go alongside Baji, who had 9 goals last year. I mean, he clearly can score, but whether he can be the guy, whether he can... This team had 31 goals last year. They were, like, I think either last or second to last in the whole league. They need scoring, and they didn't really go out and get it, so now they're going to need to have to generate it another way. The other possibilities are that they use the draft, and... You know, we're not going to spend too much time about it, but the Rapids picked up 4 forwards in the draft. Franzi Perreault, Alan Wynn, Brian Olosky out of UCLA, and Ricky Jackson. And all of them can play on the wing or up high. It's 6-5 and pick them as to whether 1 or 2 or 4 or none of them get signed out of camp. It's just unknowable. I like Franzi Perreault. He's a big body guy. He looks a bit like Baji. He looks like he could be Baji's understudy. And I think Jackson has speed off the wing that you could really use. And Olosky's, you know, dribbly and wonderful, but you stash him in USL and see what happens. But yeah, for my money, it's Baji and Agner up top.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's get into talking about the midfield, and I think for the purpose of this conversation, we'll separate them from the wingbacks. So just what we're having in the central midfield, so kind of in sort of an inverted 3-man midfield, I've got Price and Boateng kind of on the backside and Aigner up top. I guess to differentiate from your point about where you've got Aigner, Mark, you know, I see him being more the number 10 for this team simply because I think Gashi was ineffectively used at the wings at time. I think you have him underneath and you have him and Baji trade off. And I think having Aigner in that number 10 role with 2 solid, reliable midfielders behind him allows him to roam. I don't necessarily want him to be the number 10 in the sense of being exclusively central, but I want to have him, it's kind of like the Nico Lodero role that you have up in Seattle where you start him out centrally, but then, you know, it's a 3-5 whatever, where everybody's playing jazz music and it can be whatever it needs to be in that particular moment. Aigner's just starting out centrally, but if he needs to flare off with the wing because gosh, he's filling in the space, that's fine. But, you know, I just think with Baji up top really challenging at the center backs, that leaving space for Gashi, and then Aigner going wherever that space is provided or providing service to whoever's hoping. I like him in a central position, even though he was more of a wide player in Germany. And then I think it's pretty, you know, given the amount of money that they've spent on them and how high profile they are, I think Nana Boateng set up to have, you know, I don't want to say a comeback year per se, but certainly given his back injury, a better year than he had in 2016, being more familiar with the league and then actually being fit and healthy. And then I think Jack Price in the midfield there. So that's my 3-piece there. My first 2 guys off the bench, if it's replacing them, Michael Azira, you know what you're going to get out of him. Probably one of the more valuable players on this team in terms of production to salary in MLS. I think Johan Blomberg is a nice... is a nice bench piece as well. And then depending on where he fits out in the depth chart, I think we could actually see Richie Perez or Sam Hamilton potentially in that role a little bit more. Maybe Perez more of an attacking piece and Hamilton, you know, more of a central box-to-box guy. And then depending on, you know, our conversation we're going to have about the wingbacks in a minute, we could also see Dylan Serna in there in the midfield as well.
I don't think I have anything to disagree with you about in any of that. I think that the interesting question is... the Rapids are counting on a rebound for a lot of players. You're looking at Nana Boateng coming back from an off year when he broke his back early and never quite got into the swing of things, and also figuring out what he does exactly. Is he a pure 6? Is he more of an 8? He had some really nice passes, but he didn't have a lot of really devastating runs, and he was something of a non-factor defensively. He wasn't really that You know, we don't know anything about Price, although his quality is assured by many people. He's not a scorer. He's a fairly pure defensive midfielder, and he's also not a ball winner. He's a little guy. So you're kind of looking at two defensive-y, midfielder-y kind of guys. You're looking for a rebound. You're hoping for a rebound year from Gashi on top of that, and you're looking to slot Michael Azira into a new role or have him come off the bench after a year when he was with the team and they lost a lot with him as the key defensive midfielder. So it's, you know, there's as much as Rapids fans are pooping their pants over not getting the number 9 and the number 10 that they dreamed of, I personally think there's a lot more questions in that midfield than anything else.
Mm-hmm. And I guess in general, we'll talk about this a little bit when we talk about preseason expectations. You know, you talk a lot in MLS circles about European players coming. You know, David Beckham, you know, finally was able to announce MLS Miami. You know, he had a really, I remember an interview, I don't even remember who it was, where he was asked about what he told Steven Gerrard when Steven Gerrard called him right before signing with the LA Galaxy. You know, he said, it's a way better league than everybody thinks it is. It's way harder to get used to and everything. You have all these travel aspects. I'm looking right here on my depth chart right now, and between Tommy Smith and Danny Wilson on the back line, you know, you've got, I guess, you know, Castillo's a little bit more familiar with the league, having been an American, so to speak. You've got a bunch of players who are going to just have to get used to MLS, and normally we think about that being a big deal if you've got two or three new DPs or TAM level players coming in. You know, I'd say almost half the starting lineup is going to be new to the league, and that's going to be interesting to see. But you know,
there's one other thing that one guy we didn't mention, and this keeps happening. This is, I think, the third year of one guy we didn't mention kind of comments coming out about Dylan Serna. You could say, well, he's going to slot in as one of the left wing backs, but when we get there, you'll see that left wing back is chock-a-block full of guys, and Serna's a good option there. But Serna also floats underneath very well. Last year, I think his best game came mid-season. I forget who they were playing. I feel like it was Portland, but they played him inverted on the right side, cutting in with his left foot. And he has that move where he can kind of cut across the line and then pivot on his right and just cut the ball back on a shot with his left. And he's really and go near post. And he's very dangerous as kind of that, what we talked about before with Einar, a free-floating guy. He's very dangerous from either side, and we forget about him, you know. Holy Brother Zach, like, we forgot about Serna. You know, we gotta give him his props, and I think he can maybe. He's that, what was that line from one of the movies? Don't be the PG-13 guy who you're really hoping is going to go home with a girl. Be the R-rated guy that you're not exactly sure you like. Is that High Fidelity? It feels like it's High Fidelity.
That's completely over my head.
That's Dylan Serna, man. He's got to progress past the PG-13. We've all got our fingers crossed for the dude. We want him to show up to the dance with his hair slicked back and a leather jacket, you know? And score 10 goals. I don't think it's impossible, but if it doesn't happen this year, it's hashtag free Dylan Serna after this. He's got to move on and find a place where he is the guy that flourishes.
I want to make it clear that only 50% of Holding the High Line's official view on Dylan Serna is that he should be the Fonz of the 2018 Colorado Rapids. But I think in terms of, that's kind of one of the big questions I have of, you know, filling out the rest of this 18 mark of, is Dylan Serna in the 18, and if so, what is his role? Is he just sort of coming off the bench, you know, depending on where they need him, so to speak? Where does he sort of slot in? Because, you know, for a while he was a wide midfielder, and then with, you know, a number of complications, you know, he was kind of relegated to only sort of playing, you know, an outside back position in a random Open Cup game. You know, I think he could fit in one of those central three. I think he could, you know, fit in wingbacks. You know, speaking of that, let's actually go to the wingbacks. I guess first question.
Well, before you say that, there's a meta piece here, which is, like, it's been hanging over me for months since they announced Hudson, and you and I sat next to each other at the announcement, and there was a lot of excitement and energy in that room, but for me, there was, and maybe I'm like too much, you know, I'm very much a sentimentalist, but there was this overwhelming feeling for me of worrying about the players that have been on the roster till now. I mean, they made a lot of cuts in the offseason, And knowing that a guy like Dylan Cerna and Marlon Hairston and Dom Baggi, they all have to impress this coach. None of them is guaranteed a starting spot. Nobody, you know, Hudson may have watched a lot of tape about them, but they're all starting from nothing with this guy. And Dylan Cerna, he has the benefit of the homegrown tag, which financially gives him the advantage of staying on the roster for cheap. But in terms of starting time and playing time, it's a real challenge. He's got to assert himself.
Mm-hmm. And then not to bring up maybe the old regime, so to speak, you know, Mark and I, we have some good and some constructive criticism to say about Pablo Mastroianni. But, you know, I think he understood and he emotionally valued the being connected to Colorado. And in that sense, I think having a guy who was a longtime MLS player, a longtime player for the Colorado Rapids, that connected with Cerna being a homegrown maybe a little bit more than, you know, a guy coming into his first, you know, his first coaching experience.
Yeah, and I think Hudson will probably understand that. You know, the fans want to win, but I think Anthony Hudson will learn very quickly that when a Colorado kid steps on the pitch and the volume goes up, it's louder. It's always been, you know. I remember when Sam Hamilton got into his first game and there was a lot of noise. When Ensign Joe Greenspan got on the pitch, that was a big moment. He's not even a Colorado guy, but there are certain moments where, you know, you root for them. And I have a feeling that the New Zealand players that have been brought in will not have the same kind of cachet and buzz as some of our homegrowns. We'll see.
So let's talk about fullbacks, Mark. I guess let's do yes-no questions, first of all. Is there any doubt that Marlon Hairston isn't the expected starting right wing back?
Nope. He's the right back.
Okay. Castillo starting on the left, yes or no?
Yes, he's the left back.
Okay, so let's talk about backups here, because you mentioned some of those New Zealand players that come in. You know, Kip Colby, formerly the San Jose Earthquakes, come in. They bring in Wynn in a trade with the Vancouver Whitecaps. You know, we've talked about, you know, where's Cerna's role, and could he be one of those more wide players? And then also, we kind of spoke a little bit before recording about Eric Miller, and is he a center backer? Could he possibly back up Marlon Hairston? You know, we've got expectations for the starting wing backs, but any listener of this podcast who, you know, has watched Toronto FC over the course of the last couple years, you know, Steven Betasher and Justin Morrow did so much running. They needed subs and they needed some games out. As much as I think we know that Marlon Hairston is absolutely going to crush the new, you know, training regimen that they have, he's going to need some space. You know, who's filling in there? Who's coming off the bench? You know, where do you see the depth chart at fullback or at wingback filling out?
I mean, at left back is deep. It's Cerna can play there. Colby will make it into the into the 23, if not the 18, every week. Although he did not play a lot with, he was with
San Jose
last.
But
year.
I've spoken with a number of people who saw every coach's favorites. He was in the doghouse a lot for Dominic Kinnear and wasn't really given an opportunity when he really. San Jose wanted their outside backs to play a certain way that was exactly the opposite of what Kip Colby
was. And yet I looked up his numbers for the New Zealand national team, and he played regularly. He played all through their kind of final rounds, mm-hmm. and he played 90 minutes. So he's valued by Hudson. So he may even get a fair amount of regular minutes, starting minutes, you know, squad rotation minutes. Declan Wynn seems like a reach, like a work in progress, the kind of guy you stash in USL, but especially considering how far he'd be on the depth chart, and the fact that in a 5-3-2, a left-footed guy like him probably isn't super valuable outside a left back. He's not as useful. On the other side, it's a little bit more confusing, I think. You've got Marlon Hairston and you've got Eric Miller, and that's it. You don't really have anybody else since they got rid of Dennis Castillo. That might be a thing that the Rapids will be keeping their eye on, of where you kind of scrounge your right back. Maybe Jared Watts can do some time there if he's going to have to be the utility infielder of this team this year. But, you know, maybe Johan Blomberg is a guy who slots in there. We didn't talk a lot about him. I don't know anything about the guy. And I actually slotted him as a possible starter in the midfielder alongside Gashi and Price. But I don't know. But yeah, depth at right back is kind of a question. I really do think that your starting back line five is most likely, with one change every week to just spell people and give them a rest, Castillo, Danny Wilson, Tommy Smith, Eric Miller, and Marlon Hairston. And that's just because Eric Miller is a MLS veteran. He's played center back with the Rapids for a long time. He will be comfortable on that field. And Courtney Ford was very good last year in spots, and he made some rookie mistakes in spots. And I think that they will not want to throw him out in a five-man back line to learn it all over again. And Axel Schoberg, by the time this podcast is released, may not even be with the team anymore. I think it's likely he will be with the team through July. I'm happy to eat those words, but I also think he's a good player who had a bad year and who probably, based on his pace and his height, doesn't quite fit what the team is looking for anymore. And that pains me to say, because I thought Axel did a really great job in 2016.
I would agree with you, Mark. I guess just one point that I kind of want to add to that, you know, mentioning a little bit about Wynn and also possibly about Ford. We've seen, you know, with the evolution of the Rapids way, as Porrick Smith was talking about it, I was using my air quotes there for those of you who, you know, this is a podcast, you can't physically see us. You know, I think the Rapids have done a much better job retooling, and obviously you had the change in coaching staff. You know, they bring in a new athletic trainer. They're embracing analytics. Anthony Hudson said that he wants to embrace analytics. You know, I don't get the sense that that was something that maybe the past regime or some of the past coaching staffs were necessarily in. I think this might be the actual first year. I think we started to see tones of it in 2017 of the Colorado Rapids using their USL affiliation efficiently, not just having, you know, oh, Dennis Castillo's down there, you know, and, you know, that's really about it, of, you know, actually using, you know, maybe, you know, it's better for Sam Hamilton to be there playing day in and day out. You know, maybe it's better for Richie Perez. You know, maybe Courtney Ford needs a couple weeks down there, for example. I think we could actually see the Rapids start to use that a little bit better. And since they've got a couple players who maybe they've taken flyers on, you know, they've got Jack McBean, who had success in USL with LA Galaxy 2, a number of draft picks maybe actually using their USL affiliation. It's the Charleston Battery, right? It's not the Charlotte Independence. Okay, I always mix up those two. And
we'll edit that out in post, guys.
No. with the Charlotte Independence.
Yeah, John Rosch is rolling over in his grave. John's not actually dead, but he'd be rolling over in his grave. He's going to be covering for Burgundy Wave, the Charlotte Independence. He has this. He loves it. So yeah, okay. The one caveat I'll add to what you said, and I think you're right, that using USL properly is a really important tool. Hamilton played with Phoenix some last year. They stashed somebody else with Colorado Springs last year, and Castillo, like you said, went to Charlotte last year.
And Jaime Siage was actually on a USL level contract with them as well.
And so the challenge, my guess is, or I have heard rumors that Calvert will be, he's still a young guy, he's 19 years old. Caleb Calvert's going to get stashed with Charlotte for the entire year. Whether that comes true or not, I don't know. The challenge for the Rapids is, unlike about half the teams in MLS, they aren't, their USL team isn't directly under their control.
They're not an MLS 2 team.
And they're also not, like, playing in the same city or the same stadium. You got to put them on a plane. So they don't direct how it goes, which is uncomfortable, because if you have a couple of Rapids players who you want to unload on another USL team, you take it on faith that the coach there is going to find value in playing that guy, despite the fact that he might play for 3 weeks in Charlotte, and then you may need to pull him up for 3 weeks in Colorado during, you know, the World Cup break, and when you miss a couple players, and then dump him back down in Charlotte. And that can be, I can imagine, frustrating for a coach. What the Rapids need to be able to develop is a relationship, hopefully, with a coach where they say, he's yours for 18 weeks, I will leave him alone, I promise. Please start
pending
him.
Massive injuries.
Right, and by the way, the one of my favorite comments that I often hear is, why don't the Rapids affiliate with Colorado Springs? And for 2 or 3 years, what I have been told is the Rapids management and the Springs management could never see eye to eye on stuff like that. So you couldn't trust that Pablo Mascherini would send a young player down to Colorado Springs, and that the coach down in Colorado Springs and the management would actually want to put that player on the field all the time. I saw it in dribs and drabs, but overwhelmingly, you know, the dream is for the Rapids to have a USL 2 team, but financially, it's a whole nother podcast, which will drop on Thursday. It's called Intricate Financial Workings of MLS Teams Under the Current Regimes of Financial Planning in Major League Soccer and the SUM Marketplace.
Yes, of course. And I think just to add to that point, you know, some of my writing experience is birthed in the lower divisions, and you've actually seen a number of MLS teams disband their MLS 2 team due to financial concerns. And then there's another separate podcast about this, about USL moving to USL and USL D3, and how a lot of what was holding back the league in terms of their inevitable D2 sanctioning status was the caliber of a lot of the USL teams that were MLS 2 teams.
Yeah,
but in any case.
And as a Rapids fan, and not just a pundit and a writer, you know, I get sad when an early March game, when the weather is lousy and we only really have like somewhere between 6,000 and 8,000 people in the stands, all the more so imagine how bad it would be if Rapids 2 was playing.
Yes.
The Tuesday night before, during traffic, you know, during rush hour traffic. And it's, you know, March 28th, and it's only 37 degrees in the shade. Like, nobody's going.
Red Bulls, too, won U.S. They won the double. They won the equivalent of Supporters Shield and USL Cup, I want to say, 2 years ago now, maybe 2015, 2016. And they averaged, you know, about 500 people in attendance. So I just want to touch on the center back situations. If we had this podcast maybe 24 hours earlier, I did not get the sense that Danny Wilson rumors were at all true. Mark, maybe I'm just secretly pulling for Axel Højbjerg to actually be there and stay with the team and start. But now I think it's inevitable that maybe you end up moving him. And I just find it really weird that they've gone out and got center backs at a position that they kind of had. It was one of their positions of strength last year with Axel and with Courtney Ford that, you know, I just kind of find interesting. And especially since, you know, they, you know, Porrick re-signs him before, you know, coming up before the season ends and before a new head coach comes in. But I think now at this point they're actively shopping him. If they can move him during this window, I think they will. If not, you know, I think he'll be part of sort of a rotating cast of four. I like Eric Miller too much at the backup role for Hairston to maybe have him in that center back spot. So right now I've got Axel in the middle with the Tommy Wilson and with Tommy Smith and Danny Wilson on his sides, and sort of Court Ford rotating in that cast depending on what's needed from week to week. And then, like you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, I think Jared Watts is maybe your utility player between, you know, do we need a center back on the bench this week or somebody starting, or is there a hole at defensive midfield? But right now I have that. I think, you know, if Axel gets transferred to some Swedish club, you know, by the time this podcast comes out, I think my answer will change, and that, you know, I think probably Ford comes in there. But I think, you know, probably the Rapids have a lot of depth at a lot of these positions in ways they didn't have in 2016. And I think maybe the one position you have here where they could have a rotating cast and have it be healthy from a continuity standpoint and a productivity standpoint is center back, with just all of the usable either internationally proven talent they have or MLS proven caliber players.
Yeah, just one. I think I agree with everything you said there. One thing I'll just add is I just finished reading the book Soccernomics. I read a lot of soccer books. Read other books too, but that's also for another podcast. And, you know, one of the things that Soccernomics really talks about is that the number nine position is hyperinflated in price. It's super expensive. If you can grow your own striker, grow your own striker. The value in positions, and for a Moneyball team like the Rapids, who do not have the deep pockets of the Red Bulls and NYCFC and the LA Galaxy and LAFC, is to spend money on positions that other teams are not spending money on and grow players at positions that other teams are blowing their money on. So if I were a yes man for the front office, or if I had been secretly hiding under Porrick Smith's desk and assuming what the hell he is doing with all these moves, my assumption would be he bought a lot of center backs because they were cheap and they were readily accessible and they made the team better. They improved the quality. And the guys that he got were extraneous at their own clubs. And his assumption was, we're just going to load up on forwards in the draft. Baji was a fourth-round pick. Maybe Franzi Perot is your magical elf, or maybe it's Nicky Jackson, and maybe this guy just becomes the guy. And suddenly, you have moneyballed your way into a decent team. It's definitely a risky thing, but you know what? There's not really far to go down once you finish 10th. Although, we now have 12 teams in the Western Conference, so we could actually be worse than not only we were last year. We could be worse than the Galaxy were last year. We could fall to 12th. Even the Galaxy finished 11th.
Nobody in the history of Major League Soccer has ever finished 24th in the league before. So in any case, moving on. Maybe.
And now that Miami's out there, in 2 years we have a shot at being 25th. Somebody does. God forbid it be us.
And now, so moving on to maybe a bit of a more formality. Is there any doubt that Tim Howard's the starting goalkeeper at this point, despite the night in Trinidad of which we do not speak?
The recent unpleasantness, as it's referred to. I would really like to see an open competition, and I would really like them to hand the position over to Zach McMath, and I don't think that's going to happen, because you can't put the start of the face of the franchise on the bench. So, yeah, it's going to be Tim.
Tim Howard starting. I think you have Zach McMath, who's a very reliable goalkeeper, and then your sheet has it, mine doesn't. Maybe the one draft pick we think is for sure to sign the kid out of USC.
Thomas Olsen. I wouldn't say he's for sure. He's likely. A couple of years ago, was it last year or the year before, Chris Froschauer was picked out of some Big Ten school, and the Rapids even had him on the bench for a couple games, and then they cut him mid-season. So being a third goalkeeper when the team only has three goalkeepers is not a lock. The Rapids can go to Charlotte and sign that guy on a short-term contract. There are starters in USL that might be attractive. The Rapids have a very good academy goalkeeper named Kainoa Likewise, who is 19 years old. And he played half of last year with Charlotte. There's a good chance that they could sign him, or bring him out during preseason and then, pick between him and Olsen. So I don't know. I thought the Rapids were going to go out and get a goalkeeper in the second round, but there was a run in the Super Draft of 2018, the late first round, on goalkeepers. About four goalkeepers were taken in about 10 picks, three one after another, and I think a lot of the Rapids' top picks were off the board. So if you put a gun to my head and said, who's the Rapids' third goalkeeper, I'd say Olsen, the kid out of San Diego. But you never know.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So let's move on to maybe more of a big picture thing here, Mark. Preseason expectations. Obviously, the team's in Arizona right now. They'll come back to Colorado, I believe, next week, and then back to Arizona. And then, of course, they'll be back, you know, about a week before that big February 20th game, opening up CCL against Toronto. What are our expectations for preseason? What needs to happen in preseason in the next coming weeks for the club to have a successful 2018?
It's such a different preseason than last year. Last year, the Rapids preseason, I think, in the first couple games that they played, that they televised, the Desert Diamond Cup, Richie Perez and Sam Hamilton got a lot of run out, and they saw a lot of time, and Castillo started at right back, and, you know, it was play your kids. And that was because the Rapids were trying to figure out who are the 20th, 21st, 22nd, 23rd spots in the roster. They can't do that this year. They need to start the starting 11 that they need to face against TFC. TFC have in their head that the one cup they don't own is the Scotiabank CONCACAF Champions League trophy. I use the proper terminology, and Matt is acknowledging it openly. He's grinning at me. The Scotiabank. Anyways. And so they're gunning, and I think everybody would assume that they're slightly winded after ending their postseason run just a little while ago, and they're possibly going to be overlooking the Rapids. They may walk in and say, this team was crap last year. They qualified off their 2016 run. We can give them the what for very quickly and very easily, blow them out 5-0 over two legs and call it a day. Or they could just come in and be really irritating and fight for the 0-0 draw in Colorado, knowing that they have a huge advantage going home. I think that this team needs to figure it out and get it right. Last thing I'll say is, it is very interesting to wonder where the offense is going to come from, specifically in a 5-3-2. If the Rapids are going to play 5-3-2 like everybody thinks they're going to, you're expecting either a lot of crosses to be generated by Castillo or Hairston, or you're hoping that the two of them are going to be doing some sort of tiki-taka...
cutting inside like crazy.
1-2, cutting in through the middle midfield, or, you know, using the midfielders to ping-pong the ball off. I've never seen that from this team. You know, you and I have been watching this team for a long time. I've been watching for about 5 years. I've never seen them play anything like that. And it's possible. We have a new coach. But on the other hand, I've never seen that before.
Two main bullet points that I have for preseason so far and preseason for whatever's left with it. First of all, physical fitness, I think, is going to be key. You know, Porik kind of put, Gashi especially on blast, saying that he came in last preseason, you know, quite a bit out of shape. You know, they've talked a lot about the physical regimen, you know, new athletic trainers coming in, trying to use their altitude advantage, and Anthony Hudson putting in an off-season regimen almost for every single player individually. So first of all, where's everybody from their physical standpoint? Obviously, we know the players coming over from Europe are in midseason form in terms of where they are for their club season. But, you know, where's Hairston given the new role that he's going to have? What about Edgar Castillo, you know, coming off of the Apertura in Liga MX? What's Gashi like, especially, you know, what's Nana Boateng like off of his injury? Where collectively, you know, I would love to see, you know, not that any team or any league would ever make this public, but, you know, I just want to see what's the average beak test for the Rapids right now, and where is that in the respect to the rest of the leagues? You know, physical fitness on an individual and a collective basis, I think, is going to be key. And the next thing for me, continuity. You know, potentially, you know, Kevin Doyle's not on this team anymore, so whoever it is, Baji's going to have a new strike partner, and that's either going to be somebody he's slightly familiar with or possibly somebody completely new. We're going to have at least one, probably two new pieces or players in different roles in the midfields we talked about. Marlon Harrison's playing a slightly different role, albeit one that marries his two roles that he's had in the past really well. And then you've potentially got a completely new back line. So, you know, that whole thing takes time. It's completely different from, you know, last year where maybe, or a couple of years ago, when Jermaine Jones comes in and fills this gaping hole in the midfield, but the defense is all the same. It's still Sam Cronin and, you know, Michael Azira in the midfield. You know, you've got so many different parts and so many differently moving parts.
And on that point, there's a tactical question that I have that I'm going to eventually just sit down with Anthony Hudson and ask him, which is, what does he think a five-man back line does? Because when the U.S. men's national team toyed with it a couple years ago, they had Jermaine Jones play as the center back. But their idea was that he was still Jermaine Jones. He was still a roaming destroyer, and his main responsibility was to step high and also distribute as the central center back. That's not necessarily how you do it. In Arsenal played earlier this season with a five-man back line, and they played their center backs as a flat three, overwhelmingly, and they tried to move the ball up to midfield and let, you know, Elneny or whoever else was playing at kind of the D-mid-ish position distribute, or for the distribution to come off of the left side or the right side. So that's a good question, right? Because the guy who I know is the best central distributor out of the defense for the Rapids was Watts. He actually had the nicest passing touch. His defensive choice making was sometimes suspect, but he's not going to do that this year. It's going to be Tommy Smith, who, you know, I haven't seen a lot of, because I don't know about you, Matt, but I don't watch a lot of Ipswich.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I should really be spending more time scouting the English Championship, knowing that the Rapids are likely to scoop those guys up, but that's not how I roll.
Yeah, to your point, I think the biggest question mark for me right now is you've potentially got three new starting center backs who've, you know, again, I haven't watched a whole lot of Ipswich, or, you know, I watch the occasional Rangers game, especially when they have the big derby against Celtic. But, you know, I don't know. You've potentially got three new center backs who've never played together and have potentially also never played in a three-man center back line as well. So, you know, I think continuity, you know, kind of going back to my second big point, is the big question. But it's also at the center back position is the biggest point because that's where you have the least amount of familiarity. Edgar Castillo is playing in exactly the role that he played in Mexico, just with a different team. Marlon Harrison is, you know, playing the average of where he's played, you know, in his position. Baji's going to have, you know, a somewhat familiar partner. You know, the midfield's going to be a little bit jumbled as well, but, you know, that back three line, they're going to really have to get together and get really, really organized quickly, and maybe that's just going to be have to be a lot of, you know, sitting down and talking about things and Tim Howard barking for 90 minutes, you know, against Toronto FC. But, you know, that's the, you know, that was the hallmark of what made the Rapids good defensively for the past number of years, and that's maybe where they have the most uncertainty, just because that's where they have the newest people and where they have the most amount of change from last year to this year.
And put a thumbtack in it, but 3 weeks from now, talking about, you know, TFC played, except for the cup final, they played an awful lot of 5-3-2, and I have not seen a lot of, I watch a lot of soccer, I watch, you know, 4, 5, 6 matches on Saturday and another 2 or 3 on Sunday regularly. And you don't see a lot of five-man backline teams go head-to-head against another five-man backline team. We might be seeing that on February 20th. That's another interesting question that we'll get to in a couple weeks.
Yeah. On that note, we want to have a little bit of a fun segment to close off the podcast. And, Mark, we did a little bit of digging online. Do you want to tell us what happened on this week in Rapids history many years ago?
This week in Rapids history. Pachoo! I don't know why I did the pachoo. That's a throw out to the Rapids podcast. Yeah, so we're floating around trying to find interesting things that happens in the week. Matt and I both raised the reality that not a lot happens in the last week in January for most teams. So this one is just, do you recognize these names from Rapids history? So in 2008, the team issued this weekly update as to what was going on with the Colorado Rapids. Incoming draft picks and new signings like Jose Berciaga and Chase Hilgenbrink all got their first taste of outdoor January training along Colorado's Front Range.
Never heard of them.
While the returning veterans welcomed them to Dick's Sporting Goods Park. I will buy you a beer at DSGP if you come up to me wearing your Chase Hilgenbrink jersey. If you're wearing a Chase Hilgenbrink jersey, you are my new best friend. Later down it says in here, injury updates. And this is just a, did you know these guys used to be with the Rapids? Probably not. Rapids fans will be happy to note that Facundo Erpin, Dan Gargan...
Release the Gargan!
...and Hercules Gomez were on the pitch training after recovering from off-season surgeries. Both Ugo Ihemelu and Connor Casey are still rehabbing after also undergoing the knife this winter. So, you know, I do know that... I am familiar with Connor Casey. He is one of our coaches. And I remember hearing from other people about Ugo Ihemelu. And this is the first I've ever heard of somebody named Facundo Erpin, which sounds like something you might do after drinking heavily one night. Last thing that was in these notes that I just wanted to throw out there. At this time in 2008, 10 years ago today, Buna Kundal had spent the month of January in Africa with the Senegalese national team, as Senegal tied Tunisia 2-2 in the African Cup of Nations, then fell 3-1 to Angola. Buna Time, as he's known, was in the goal for both matches.
Okay, then, interesting stuff. Well, that does it for the pilot episode of Holding the High Line. Mark, where can people find you on Twitter and the internet in general?
I am Rapids Rabbi, and I write for Burgundy Wave. You can find me there.
And you can find me, Matt Pollard, on Twitter at LWS Matt Pollard, and you can find all of my other written and audio musings at lastwordonsoccer.com. I think that does it for us, Mark. Any other closing words or things that we missed?
Buddha time!
Okay, then. Listeners, you can subscribe to Holding the High Line on iTunes, and we're looking at getting across all podcatcher platforms that some of you may personally prefer. You can follow us on Twitter at Rapids96Podcast, and if you'd like to banter at us a little in more than 280 characters, you can email us at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com.
Keep it clean, kids. This is going to be a not-explicit podcast, so you can listen with your children or punish them when they're bad with this podcast.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I guess on that note, thank you for listening to this episode. We will catch you next time, hopefully in a week or so.
See you then.